get in the area off of him.
Good evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us on the line this evening Mr. David Whitney from the Institute on the Constitution. Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. And, of course, for those of our listeners who live up in the Spokane area, I just want to make a quick announcement right now, and that is, of course, you have an Institute of the Constitution that meets up there regularly there, and there's going to be a meeting at the Shiloh Inn right there on the 22nd of October, when Dr. John Eijmo is going to be coming to Spokane area to talk, and you certainly will want to go see that. And actually, of course, you can want to know more about that or about the institute that's taking place right now. Why don't you call 509-891-7428? That's 509-891-7428, and mark down October 22nd when Dr. John Eijmo will be there talking at the Shiloh Inn. But with that as background, let's talk a little bit about the Institute of the Constitution, which I believe is an idea that time has come. Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about what the Institute is and why every one of our listeners should either participate in an institute or establish an institute in their community?
Yes, Dr. Stan, we believe it is the hope for our nation to return us to the constitutional republic that our founders gave to us when they established this country, at great cost, by the way, to them personally, lives for some of them and a fortune for many of them. But the Institute on the Constitution is a simple turnkey program by which someone can host a training session that will take people through the Christian heritage, the Christian foundation of our nation. People will come to understand that those who came to the shores of this continent came with a purpose to bring the good news of Jesus Christ to the lost that lived in this native land, and also to establish a city on a hill. That is a form of society that would be a light to the whole world, that the gospel of Jesus Christ would be spread worldwide. And, you know, as history has shown, we have seen that taking place, but we have lost that vision, and our light is either completely dimmed at this point, or some would argue it's gone out, because we have lost the vision that our founding fathers had. And so the Institute on the Constitution is a series of 12 half-hour lectures done by Dr. John Eijmo, a constitutional law professor who is a solid Christian and one who clearly understands the Christian underpinnings for our founding documents, the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution. The course then studies those documents carefully to understand what the founders intended them to mean and how the founders applied them at the beginning of our nation, and then walk through the Articles of the Constitution, as well as the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, as well as the succeeding amendments from that point forward. The course also shows how our nation has drifted away from what our founders designed it to be. And in studying how we have drifted away from that, much has to do with the fact that most people do not understand the Constitution, nor the Declaration of Independence. They do not understand the form of government that our founders gave us, founded on Christian and biblical concepts of law and government, and that the way back is to train people, first of all, to understand it, and then train them to apply it. And the application comes first in holding the elected officials that we send to our state capitals, as well as to Washington, D.C., holding those elected officials accountable to the Constitution they take an oath to uphold. We all know the president takes an oath at his inauguration, but most people may not know that every senator, every congressman, every delegate they send to their state capital, they also take an oath to uphold the Constitution, and the Constitution as the founders wrote it, as the founders intended it to be applied. And what is has failed in our country is the role that citizens are to play in holding elected officials accountable to what they have sworn under oath to be accountable to. And of course, we know that some of those elected officials, they know what the Constitution says. They understand that they are violating the Constitution, and they have no intention of changing. As a matter of fact, the very reason they may be in office is to undermine the Constitution and create a different form of government, which is, as some have said, we are not living under a constitutional republic any longer. It's another form of government altogether. And the recourse that we have as people is to turn them out of office, to change who is in power and put those in power who will uphold the Constitution, both state and federal constitutions. And that's what this course is training people to do nationwide.
And I really think it's an exciting thing, because I'm just so glad that the people back there in Annapolis, Maryland, picked up the ball and ran with it. Dr. Eitzma had sent me a set of his videos many years ago, and I just didn't have time to really sit down, go through them, and begin putting together a program that could be aired across America. But the Institute on the Constitution did, thanks to the efforts of Michael Perutka and his brother back there. And of course, they then have set up the Institute and put together the program. And then, of course, having Dave Whitney and other people worked to get these into communities all across the United States. Really, what's so exciting is to know that a number of these are going out every week. People are calling in. Yes. People are hearing. People are getting the Institutes. They're learning themselves, and then they're beginning to teach others. You see, if you don't know where you came from, how do you know where you're going? And, of course, we're going in entirely the wrong direction, because there really are evil and wicked people who hate America, who hate freedom, who hate Christianity, and the fact that America was once a Christian nation. And they want to use our military and financial power to force the whole world into this one world government. And that was not the function of America. America was to have a limited government. We were to avoid foreign entanglements and foreign wars. And of course, the entire concept of our Constitution was a limited centralized authority, separation of powers between not only the executive, judicial, and legislative branches of government at the national level, but between the federal government and the states, and the states and the people. And the states were to have tremendous power. Mm-hmm. All matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be handled at the state, never at the federal level. So where did we go wrong? Where did we begin veering away from our constitutional concept of individual freedom under God towards this concept of all power in Washington, D.C., a federal police force, the federal government watching and monitoring everybody in this country in the name of fighting terrorism? That's what we're doing.
That's the latest war to establish this global one world, new world order, as the former Bush called it. You know, if you look back at the history of our country, the battle was taking place before, actually, the war between the states. There was a battle for those who wanted to centralize power, who wanted to basically violate the design of the Constitution. And those forces were the ones that pushed our nation into that bloody war between the states. And the accomplishment of that war between the states, especially in the South, was specifically to crush states' rights, to crush what you were just talking about, that separation of powers between federal, state, and local governments, to break down that wall of separation that the Constitution actually established, not between the God and the government, but between the federal and the state governments. As you said, the state governments were to be very powerful. Now the state governments have been so weakened and so stripped of power that they're mere functionaries on the end of a string that the federal government, whenever it pulls the string, they have to jump. For example, we just had a great honor this past Friday. Each month we have a special guest lecturer here at the Institute on the Constitution, and this month we had none other than Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama, Roy Moore. And he did an excellent job. We had a huge turnout, the largest ever. About 1,000 people turned out for this lecture. And he explained very clearly what the battle there in Alabama is all about. It's not about a monument depicting the Ten Commandments. That's what it's centered on, but that's not really what it's about. It's really about, does the federal government have the right and the power to tell the state government of Alabama what it can and cannot do in its own state buildings? And the Constitution of the United States says the federal government has no right and no power to do what they have done in Montgomery, Alabama. They have violated the Constitution. That federal judge, Myron Thompson, has violated his oath, and people have called Justice Roy Moore a lawbreaker because he did not obey the edict of this Myron Thompson, this federal judge. But he didn't break the law. Myron Thompson broke the law. He's the lawbreaker because he violated the Constitution, which, with the separation of powers, prevented the federal judiciary from entering into the affairs of the state of Alabama, as all the other 50 states. In other words, as you said, there's a fence put around the federal government preventing it from doing certain things. They have violated that wall so repeatedly that most people now roll over and say, well, that's just the way it is. When a federal judge issues an edict, and that's what it is, when he issues an edict, everybody has to obey it. And people have said that, how dare Justice Roy Moore disobey the rule of law? What rule of law? What law? It was the edict of a federal judge. There's no law written down that says the state of Alabama cannot have the Ten Commandments in its official Supreme Court building. No law at all. It was just the edict of this judge that says, we rule that you must remove that monument. So most people in our nation, unfortunately, most people who call themselves conservatives do not understand the issue. And the reason they don't understand is they don't understand the Constitution. And that's why we're so passionate about teaching people the true meaning of the Constitution. And the true meaning is what the founders meant it to mean. And if you read their other writings, you read the Federalist Papers, you come to understand exactly what they intended when they put together our system of government.
And of course, I think what people have to understand is we have judges who don't believe in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. They are doing what they're doing because of their intense hatred of America and everything it stands for. We call this judicial activism, but behind that, of course, is this anti-Christian or Judeo-Christian bias, because this is really all about a conspiracy against God. It's described in the Bible. It's been here since the beginning of time. And unfortunately, it dominates what's going on in America today. And the fact that this is never brought out in our newspaper reflects not that it isn't true. It reflects the fact that we now have a media monopoly. In fact, we're carrying a new book by that title. And it goes into the fact, you know, 15, 20 years ago, there were over 100 corporations that dominated the American media. Today, there are six. Six major corporations dominate the majority of our media outlets in America. And believe me, they have a common denominator in intense hatred of Christianity and the God of the Bible. And until people understand that we're not getting the truth from the media, until they understand that if we don't stand up for God and for the Bible, and certainly for our way of life, then we'll certainly lose it.
Yeah, this past Monday was the opening session of the U.S. Supreme Court, and I joined several hundred people on the, they would not let us on the steps of the Supreme Court. Those marble steps are somehow sacred, and dare you not step on them if you're protesting. We're protesting judicial tyranny. The judges of the Supreme Court, just as you said, have as their intention, as their purpose, to destroy our form of government. You know, I was reading through the Declaration of Independence today just once again, and reminded me very clearly that when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of earth a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, these in respect to the opinions of mankind requires that we should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And then, whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So our founding fathers, they looked at what they were suffering under, tyranny of King George III, and they said, God has given us rights, not King George III. God has given us rights. King George III is violating those rights. Therefore, we, before God, with a good conscience, can overthrow this king and establish a form of government that will secure our God-given rights. And that's what we're seeking to do.
Ed, Ed is calling in from Aptos. Ed, do you have a question or comment?
Question, Dr. Stan. Could you have your guest kind of explain more in depth the events that happened pre-Civil War that started all this?
All right, Ed is asking, what were the events that happened before the Civil War that led up to this idea of wanting to change our form of government? Do you want to comment on that at all?
I would love
to. And who the people were who were working at that time to centralize all power in Washington, D.C.? Because, of course, this was really not a war about slavery. Do you realize the Emancipation Proclamation wasn't signed, I think, until 1863?
And it didn't free any slaves whatsoever.
Right.
Because the Emancipation Proclamation actually only freed slaves in the territory that the Union Army did not control. And in other words, the area of the South the Union Army did control, those slaves were not freed with the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, that's kind of ironic when you think about it. The area the North had power over, they would not free the slaves. The area they had no control over, that's the slaves supposedly freed by the Emancipation Proclamation.
And
that's an excellent question, and let me answer it in brief, but let me also give you a resource, an excellent book that was published just a few years ago by Dr. Tom DiLorenzo. Tom DiLorenzo's book, The Real Lincoln. The Real Lincoln gives you detailed and gives you ample footnotes to verify that what he is saying is true. In the research that's available out there. But the battle was between what is called mercantilism and those who would retain a constitutional republic. Of course, the president who brought us the war between the states, Lincoln, he himself was a mercantilist. And a mercantilist is one who wants to merge the powers of government with the powers of big business, so that the two are hand in hand. In other words, the big business people would give money to their selected politicians, who in turn would give special favors and monopolies and so forth to the big business. So it's kind of a two-part monopoly, a monopoly on the part of the government, a monopoly on the part of the big business, and the two working hand in hand completely would corrupt the constitutional republic. Henry Clay was one who was also a mercantilist, and there were a number who were working together alongside Lincoln with this dream of linking big business with big government. For example, one of their great boondoggles was to invest enormous amounts of money, both federally and on a state level, in building railroads. That was the big push at that time before the war between the states. And many of those railroads were financed with money from taxpayers. And that was against what the Constitution permitted the federal government to do. The federal government was never to take money to enhance big business or to give special rights to big business. We could answer some more along those lines, but I hear the music and the break is coming up.
All right, fine. Well, I will tell you, Ed, I heard the chief theoretician from the Communist Party, his name was Aptheker, and he was speaking down here at the Loud Nelson Center, and he mentioned that the communists were working in the union government at the time of the Civil War. That was Herbert Aptheker. The communists were here using that at that time to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest this evening is David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And David is going into the background of the mercantilism that was going on that led up to the Civil War. And also there was a matter of tariffs, too. The tariffs were to protect the northern industries at the expense of the southerners who'd have to buy these products at inflated prices. Wasn't that another factor?
That's right. And the North had the power because they had a lot greater manufacturing capabilities than the South. The South had a lot of raw material and, you know, producing many material goods that way. And so there were unfair tariffs that were a great part of what fomented the war between the states and ultimately led to the Southerners recognizing that we're not going to get a fair shake in Congress. There's no way we're going to get a fair hearing. Therefore, the only way that we can survive economically is to separate ourselves, is to secede from this union and be economically independent of it, because they are basically forcing us into poverty, forcing us to buy their goods rather than to be able to compete on the open market with the goods from England or from other nations. And so there was a very unfair practice going on because the North had a greater number of people in the Congress and therefore were in control of the decisions made regarding tariffs.
And of course, if you talk to Southerners, they refer to the Civil War as the War of Northern Aggression, pointing out it had nothing to do with slavery. That's what they have to tell people today. But then, of course, most of history has been rewritten.
And most people, you know, you could find out if people make doubt that what we're saying is true, and I understand why they would, because they've been taught in government schools and so forth that they have never heard anything negative about Lincoln. He's, you know, touted as the greatest hero in America and so on, which is not true if you look at the facts. But if you look at the very first inaugural address of President Lincoln, it's probably available online, it's easily available in any library, he even says there that he has no intention of affecting or touching slavery at all. In other words, the war was not begun with any intention to free the slaves. The war was begun to subjugate the South and to keep it in the Union. Now, this is an interesting idea. If you join a club, oh, whatever club you want to think of, Kiwanis or some organization, you join this organization of your own free will. And once you join this organization, the other members of this organization or the head of this organization holds a gun to your head and says, you cannot leave this organization. If you do, I will pull the trigger. Now, is that freedom? Oh, no. But that's exactly what was taking place in the war between the states. Every state understood very clearly one of their rights under the Constitution was to secede from the Union. They could step out at any time. As a matter of fact, up in Connecticut, just I think it was about 20 years earlier than the war between the states, the northern states were talking about seceding. And the middle Atlantic states also had talked about seceding, but the northern states there, when they met in Connecticut, they voted down the idea. Every single state in the Union at that point in history understood they had the right to secede from the Union. And Lincoln claimed that the war was being fought, not for slavery, obviously, but that for the issue that they did not have the right to secede from the Union. He claimed that he was preserving the Union. But really what Lincoln was doing was beginning the destruction of the United States Constitution. And it didn't happen rapidly, but it did in the South following the war between the states during the era called Reconstruction. Oh, the South was decimated politically. And their system...
Hold that thought, David. We're going to bring in our friends here in the North. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And we were talking about the Civil War. And let me just point out, there's a wonderful movie out there. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called The Gangs of New York. And it's the story, of course, of what New York was like immediately before and during the opening years of the Civil War. And you'll see there, of course, the portrayal of the draft riots. There were literally 2,000 Americans killed because they didn't want to be drafted to fight in Lincoln's stupid war. And it was at that point that Lincoln had to somehow be able to come up with a justification for the war. And so he began talking about slavery issue and, of course, passed the Emancipation Proclamation. And as I recall, it was about 1863 or late 1862. It was long after the Civil War had started.
Yes.
They had to have a justification for the war because the men didn't want to fight.
That's
well, right.
Right
now, of course, we don't have a draft in America, but if we do resume a draft so we can pursue the elitist dream of empire, why, of course, will you want your son or your daughter or your father or your brother to go off to fight in wars that are not fought to defend America at all, but to pursue an imperialist dream? Well, in many respects, that was what this was really all about, because they wanted an imperial America. They wanted to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and destroy this very foundation of freedom, which had been the hallmark of our nation, with limited centralized power. And, of course, then separation of powers and power diffused from the federal to the state government, from the state to the local community. That, of course, was not what the elitists wanted, and they were working at that time before and during the Civil War.
That's right. As a matter of fact, another great movie I could recommend to people to understand this issue better is Gods and Generals. I believe it's out now, available in video stores.
In fact, that is the best-selling DVD of all time.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because if people listen to the arguments presented there, not the Northern arguments, but the Southern arguments, they will clearly understand that the Southerners had every right to defend themselves against the invasion of the Northern armies. They had every right to secede from the Union. Here in Maryland, we had a unique situation that most people have never heard about, that President Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus, that is, the right to a trial, the right to accusations being filed against you if you are imprisoned. Well, here in Maryland, there was talk among various legislators about when they met, and they only meet for 3 months of the year, like late November through end of March. But before they met, there was some talk among them about voting on the issue of secession. Would Maryland secede from the Union? Many of them were very favorable of this. Lincoln, through his spies, found out which legislators were favorable towards secession, and he sent federal troops to arrest every single one of those legislators in their homes in Maryland before the legislative session began. I believe it was in November. And he hauled them all off, and he put them in prison in Fort McHenry. You remember Fort McHenry, the famous Star-Spangled Banner was written for Sir Francis Scott Key. Well, his grandson was one of those legislators that was arrested by Lincoln, put in prison, never charged with any crime, never brought to trial. And Lincoln did this all over the United States. Anybody in any newspaper that published a negative editorial about Lincoln, their newspapers were usually destroyed physically, the printing press is destroyed, and the editors imprisoned without any charges, without a trial ever happening. He suspended habeas corpus during the entirety of the war between the states, just one of his dictatorial acts. But I digress. There's many more things that we could talk about. That's where it began. That's where the centralized power got its start, the destruction of our constitutional republic. Now, it took many years before we come to where we are at today, because many people understood the Constitution in that day, and they knew Lincoln was violating the Constitution. Unlike today, most people for the past 50 or longer years have never studied the Constitution as the founders intended it to be understood. They've never even studied the Declaration of Independence and what the founders were actually stating in that document. and therefore they believe the lies of the leftists who tell them this is what the Constitution means and this is what the Declaration, you know. So they listen to the lies of the revisionists rather than studying the actual documents. And that's what we at Institute on the Constitution are designed to do.
And, of course, our founding fathers made it very difficult to alter the Constitution. Yes, it could be altered by the process of amendment. But, of course, you would need a majority of the states, and then you would have to have a majority of Congress. It made it very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, when you have judges who don't believe in our way of life, they can simply amend the Constitution in violation of their oath of office by judicial edict. It's time the American people understood, and, of course, some of those justices are being replaced or certainly their power restricted. If not, the freedom that we've known will cease to exist. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there listening to us and you think that we have an important message, if you think that this information needs to be heard across America, if you feel that there is an organized effort to conceal the truth about what's happening from the American people, we do hope that many of you will decide right now that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day as we reach out across America by radio, by shortwave, by satellite, by internet. And, of course, we are able to reach people, and many of our programs, our afternoon programs, the stations pull them down. And once people hear them and they tell the station manager they love the state programs, why, of course, they become a regular part of the radio schedule. And so we have a number of stations. We do a program at 7 o'clock every morning out of Colorado, and there's a little station back in Maryland that pulls us down regularly, and people are listening on the satellite all across America can hear that or hear it on the internet. We have listeners in Louisiana who pick up that program on the internet, and our afternoon programs are heard in certainly in the northern part of New York on at least three stations, and Tennessee and Kansas, as well as shortwave and the internet, and then, of course, major stations here in California. You know, what a wonderful opportunity to begin to break the media monopoly that controls what the American people think. But quite frankly, we can't do it without the help of people who agree with us. And fortunately, we do have people who week in and month out and year out have helped us. And some of them, of course, are having financial problems now, and so we're always looking for additional support. If you think there's a problem and you'd like to become part of our family, the Radio Liberty family of supporters, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. Or if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and let me suggest our September newsletter, because it tells you what really happened on the morning of September 11th. 2001. It's basically the suppressed testimony of Mindy Kleinberg, who actually testified before the investigating committee appointed by the president to look into what happened on 9/11, and she testified in March of this year. Of course, the media censored what she said, and I suspect most people will never read Mindy Kleinberg's testimony. Unless, of course, you get my September letter, where we've already included the entire text of her testimony, as well as an understanding of the significance of what she said. So anyway, if you'd like a free copy of that newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to send it. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is David Whitney, and we've been talking about, of course, the Civil War and the part that it played in beginning to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and as I said earlier, I heard Herbert Aptheker, who was the chief theoretician of the Communist Party, speaking here in my community, the People's Republic of Santa Cruz, where I live. And, of course, he was commenting how the communists were there working during the Civil War. Why? Because, of course, the purpose of communism has always been to centralize all power with government and have an authoritarian society under the control of a ruling elite, because that's what communism is really all about. The dictatorship, not by the proletariat, but of the proletariat, and only when, of course, mankind has been transformed will the dictatorship wither away. What people don't understand, it was never intended to wither away. Karl Marx didn't believe in communism. He knew it wouldn't work, but he was paid by a group of very wealthy men called the Society of the Just to write the Communist Manifesto and all of the other gobbledygook about Das Kapital, to convince a lot of fuzzy-headed intellectuals that if we only gave all power to the state, we could have freedom. But, of course, this would require the destruction of the American concept of government, because America's always been the target. Destroy America, you destroy Christian civilization. And, of course, at that point, why the world drops into the hands of these people who are trying to establish the New World Order, the New World Religion, under their control. David, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Yeah, and before I do, let me just let people know how they can get a hold of us at Institute on the Constitution. We have a website, www.iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. Or they can call us, 410-760-9068. And if they'd like to host a Institute on the Constitution in their church or their community center, we put together a host kit that contains all the material. It's a very turnkey operation. You don't have to know a lot about the Constitution. You can learn along with the class that you're hosting. An excellent way to spread the message, because we recognize the only way to turn things back is if millions upon millions of Americans knew the truth and believed and began applying that truth to holding their elected officials accountable and running for office themselves. Because once they take this course, they will understand the Constitution better than most elected officials. And I stand by that, because I've talked to a number of elected officials who, if they know the Constitution, they're not committed to following it. But anyway, in the story...
Let's get that telephone number one more time. That's 410-760-9068.
That's correct.
410-760-9068. And, of course, that is the address. Just give them a call there to find out about the Institute of the Constitution.
Yes,
okay,
that's
David.
Right. And so what took place, especially in the Reconstruction phase, was a destruction in the South of all the institutions that preserved their freedom. For example, they paid people to be Republicans, and they paid them to vote Republican, and they paid to destroy the system in the South that had existed since the founding of, actually even before the founding of our country. They paid people, and what took place there was that the people who owned land often had that land taken from them, disenfranchised, and of course as taxes were raised, property taxes, people who owned large tracts of land were completely disenfranchised. So one whole strata of society was destroyed. Those who had land, those who had property, those who had up to that point in time, then those preserving that society were removed. And then, of course, carpetbaggers and the rest came in. That was the beginning, because it had to be done in the South before the destruction could take place in the North. There was a great deal of resistance to Lincoln in the North as well, which people don't hear about, because conveniently most historians, other than Dr. Tom D. Lorenzo, who wrote the book Real Lincoln, most historians have an agenda in what they're communicating. They are one-worlders. They are for, as you say, communism, big centralized government. That's what they're for. And so they praise Lincoln even when they admit. Some of those who praise Lincoln admit that Lincoln violated the Constitution. They admit that he was a dictator. They admit that he did all these evil things, but they say, oh, he did it for the right reason. That is, to establish a federalized, centralized government such as we have today. Well, that got the motion moving in terms of destroying our constitutional republic here in the United States. But there's a bigger plan, as you know, a worldwide plan. And Woodrow Wilson was the president who furthered that destruction of our constitutional republic to move us towards that one world, new world order. His League of Nations did not succeed because there were people in the Congress who understood this is unconstitutional. This cannot be permitted in our land. This is completely against what our nation is about. So they resisted his League of Nations and refused to become part of it, which of course meant that it did not succeed, because if the United States was not in it, it would not succeed. But they continued with their plans, and we know that the United Nations, when it founded, it was formed on the same principles, this idea that of creating a international body that ultimately would be the one world government, the new world order. So this plan, as you said, has been in operation in terms of its design and strategy for more than a century. And we see today a rapid advance of what's happening today. If we take it from Woodrow Wilson forward, FDR did a great deal of damage to further destroy our nation and basically to create the welfare state. You see, the trick was if people become slaves of the federal government, they become dependent on the federal government, then whatever the federal government tells them to do, they will do. So there's two ways of doing that. Creating direct dependency by welfare, so anybody that receives welfare from the federal government then becomes beholden to what the federal government tells them to do. The second way is by employment. The biggest employer in our nation is who? Oh, the government, federal government, employs hundreds of thousands of people, and all those people, of course, their paycheck being dependent upon the federal government, they're not so likely to want to see a smaller federal government. They recognize that might even cut their job or at least their paycheck. So there's a whole bunch of people that, I'm trying to remember the author who came up, Joseph Sobran had this excellent phrase. I think he spoke of them as parasites on the body of our nation. And they're beholden because, in a sense, they're slaves to the federal government. They're not likely to rise up and try to throw off that government because they have become dependent upon it. And so that was the stage that FDR effectively brought into our country. And you know, we saw the great growth of the welfare state and you know, work programs that he instituted in his day.
But, of course, you know, we see Wilson, of course, using the First World War to get the world into the League of Nations. And that wonderful, wonderful slogan of the war to end all wars, the war to make the world safe for democracy, knowing full well we're a republic and not a democracy. And they sent our boys off to fight in a foreign land with those slogans, the war to end all wars. They knew, of course, it was a lie. Unless, of course, the League of Nations became the world government. And then, of course, FDR used the Second World War, the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor to bring America into that war. The purpose was to create the United Nations. And, of course, the current war in Iraq is not being fought because of weapons of mass destruction. Oh, shucks, we find out that, see, there weren't any weapons of mass destruction there. Well, now we're there, of course, to liberate the Iraqi people, only we're planning on being there indefinitely. And it's really all about, of course, transforming the Middle East so that the Arab countries, the Muslim countries, will be forced to go into this new world order. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
We have to change their outlook, their world view. And when they're willing to go into the new world order, we have our dictators we've appointed in most other countries throughout the world being kept in power by American Special Forces units, which are stationed in dictatorships all throughout the world, in Georgia and Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and Afghanistan and certainly now in Iraq, people we've appointed to power who will go along with our agenda. And the real objective is the New World Order, the New World Religion. Until you understand that, nothing makes sense. Because, of course, we were lied to when they said that there were weapons of mass destruction there. They knew what we have told you repeatedly. Saddam sent his weapons into Syria long before the war.
Mm-hmm.
Our government knew that, but they couldn't very well tell that to the American people, could they? Because then, of course, how would they justify the war?
That's right. And, of course, our last freedoms here are being stripped away with things like the Patriot Act and Homeland Security and so forth. Most people don't realize, I know this is the case now in the state of Maryland because I testified against this piece of legislation, the Health Emergency Powers Act that basically was handed down to all the state governments and they were told, institute this thing verbatim. Don't change a wording of it. And you compare the Health Emergency Powers Act all over the United States, you'll find they're similar. They're being passed in legislatures. I guess California, they haven't succeeded yet, but I'm sure they're going to work towards it every single year. But this makes the governor of each state a dictator. All the governor of the state needs to do is declare there is a medical emergency, and he can do anything with the citizens of his state once he declares there's a medical emergency.
Even force you to be vaccinated.
That's right. Against your will, he could force you to be vaccinated. He could separate the members of families, quarantining them in separate locations. He can send them to work projects that they are forced. He's basically a dictator that has slaves of the entire citizens of his state at his disposal to do with them whatever he chooses, and you have no rights, and if you resist, then you are the criminal.
And, of course, the criminal penalties for refusing vaccination. It is the most incredible legislation. It's called the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, or the we call it MEPA, Model Emergency Health Powers Act. And, of course, so you can get that on the Internet, or we do have copies of that available. So if you're out there in the listening audience, you have questions or comments, why, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. The Patriot Bill is a blatantly anti-constitution. It's blatantly unconstitutional. But does anybody really think that our Supreme Court justices, those who have been appointed to undermine and destroy the fabric of our society, are really going to come out against any of these dictatorial problems? After all, we need them because we've got to fight terrorism.
And so this is kind of the 11th hour in terms of our freedom. We've given a brief history here of without a whole lot of detail, but nonetheless, from the time prior to the war between the states all the way up until our present, and your freedoms are just about gone. They're just about completely removed. Unfortunately, most Americans are blithely unaware of that. They're happy with their entertainment, and they're getting a paycheck, and they're not worried about anything. They're in for a rude awakening unless Americans stand up and say, we will not allow this. We are going to rise up just as our founders did and say, we are under a dictatorship. We recognize tyranny. We can smell a rat when that rat is in our presence, and we are going to take our nation back. We can still do it because the Constitution still exists for the United States. It still exists for each state, and although it has been violated by those in power, they can be put out of power. It's not too late, but it is very, very close to the last hour available to rise up and actually turn things around for our freedom. And that's why we put together this kit, Institute on the Constitution, to train Americans in the founding documents of our nation, in the understanding and the worldview of our founding fathers, which was a biblical worldview, very clearly. And people can get our host kit to host it in their community or church at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And now we have the availability, if they'd like to order it online, to go to our website at iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com.
And I think really the nice thing about this is you have an opportunity to learn something over a 12-week or 6-week period, depending on how long you want to take. In fact, some of the, I understand that sometimes they'll even put the institutes on a couple of days on a weekend.
That's right. Actually, we're doing that for legislators here in Maryland, and we're excited. It looks like there's 12 legislators that are going to come on a 2-day session later this month. Last year we only had 2 legislators, so we see this as progress, because most of these legislators have not studied the Constitution. They do not understand these principles. If we can turn their minds around, maybe we can undo some of the evil that has already been done here in the state of Maryland, and we hope to spread that across the country, that every state would be holding an institute on the Constitution just for their state senators and state delegates and representatives, to train them in what our public schools never trained them in, what the Constitution actually teaches, what the Constitution actually says. And if we can see that take place, we could see a revolution and an entire change, and the New World Order would have to go on without the United States. But it's got to take millions of Americans waking up, stepping forward, hosting a class in their home or in their community or in their church, leading fellow citizens to understand the truth about our nation, and then acting upon that truth in terms of only putting people into office who will uphold the Constitution, putting people out of office who will not, and perhaps running for office themselves. In our very first class, the year 2000, One of those who came was Don Dwyer, and he got very excited about what he was learning. This was new stuff for him, and he was so convicted by what he learned that a couple of years later he decided he needed to run for office here in Maryland, run for the House of Delegates. Everybody told him, you have no political experience, you've never been elected to anything in your life, you cannot succeed. Particularly when he chose as his platform that he was standing as a constitutionalist and a Second Amendment supporter and pro-life. And that's the three things he told people. And the Republicans, he ran as a Republican, they told him, you'll never get elected, Don. You got to stop talking about these issues. You know, people don't want to hear about that. Well, he was overwhelmingly elected, served his first term this past year, and because he focused on the Constitution, not only in the United States, but of the state of Maryland, he has had an influence already in Annapolis that is very significant for a first-year freshman, and we have great hopes that God is going to use him to draw many other legislators to an understanding that can turn one of the most liberal states here on the East Coast, the state of Maryland, around.
And, you know, really what's so interesting, David, is that most people are actually pro-life. Now, there's some people, well, yes, I'm pro-life, but, you know, and then they talk about rape and abortion. But most people know that partial birth abortion is bad. Most people really oppose abortion if there was just some way of course, avoiding the difficult problems that come with it. Certainly, if you look across the nation, anybody who runs against guns in favor of gun control is going to lose the election. In fact, one of the things that Governor Davis has done here in California, he lists about five things he's done, and one of them is to bring in the most draconian, I don't think he uses that word, but that's really what he's inferring, gun control laws in the country. And of course, you know, we have given assured a woman's right to choose, and we've come up with these wonderful new environmental laws to give us clean air. We've taken the guns away, and of course, he's going right down. I mean, it's not totally simply his mishandling of the electric crisis. It's not totally his mishandling of the budget. People don't like the things that he's done. And you come out in favor against guns, and the average individual has enough common sense to know that it's not true. So, and I think the average individual supports the Constitution. We're just told, oh, no, you can't talk about those things, because that isn't what people want to hear. Well, I think the average individual is a lot smarter than the political pundits.
That's right. And that's what we need, average individuals who take this course and understand the Constitution, study then the Constitution of their state, and they take those principles to their state house and turn their own states around. We need to get rid of the professional politicians. We need average citizens to go in, serve a term, and not become lifelong politicians, but serve a term taking the principles that they've learned and applying them. And Don Dwyer is an excellent example. It can be done. It can be done, and with amazing success. And actually, he taught the course for a number of sessions before he ran for the legislature, and he had an ability just to talk to people. That's all it took. And many people would be able to successfully run for office once they understand these principles and are confident enough in those principles to tell others about them and teach others these principles. And that's basically what he did in his campaign. He talked to people and explained the Constitution to them, and they knew once they heard the explanation that they'd been lied to. And once they understood they'd been lied to, they began to trust him and say, wait a minute, I know you're not a seasoned politician, and therefore I trust you more than those who are already in office.
Well, I think that what we need are people who are willing to dedicate themselves to this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. Well, let's go to Tom. And Tom, where are you calling from?
No, it's Ron.
Oh, Ron. Okay, Ron, where are you calling from?
Washington.
Okay, Ron from Richland, Washington. Okay,
Ron. Tom Reed's American Christian Network.
Okay, fine. Well, somebody wrote Tom up there. So anyway, glad to have you with us, Ron.
He didn't hear it too well.
Okay.
But anyway, I certainly support what your guest is trying to do, is trying to educate people on the Constitution. However, when they people, I believe most people don't want a government, they want a giverment. And before government can give us, it must first take us away.
Yes.
And people don't seem to understand that. They figure they'll take it away from somebody else, and that way they won't have to raise their kids, They won't have to pay for their own health insurance. There's many things that they won't have to pay for that Uncle Sugar will pay for. And when we get that corrupt and that decadent, trying to persuade people that they want to be free, and what that means is all these free lunches go away. Well, I don't know how you can get people to vote for you.
Ron, the most important thing you convince people of is that government doesn't have any money other than what it takes from us, what it prints, or what it borrows. Government doesn't have any money. And once they understand that, of course, you can never trust government. Our founding fathers didn't trust government. In fact, you know, those wonderful sayings by Washington, you know, government is not persuasion, eloquence. Government is not persuasion.
Reason,
government,
you know,
is force,
government is force.
Fire, a dangerous servant, but a fearful master. Our founding fathers feared government, and what we need is to teach that lesson to our Americans today.
And there's plenty of illustrations today of why we should fear government if people really understood the Patriot Act, if people really understood what Homeland Security, if people really understood the next time they go to the airport, they're going to be given a color, green, yellow, or red. Every passenger is going to be profiled. If they understood the cost to them personally, if they began to see that personal cost, that their liberty is being taken away, then they would wake up and realize, wait a minute, I don't want the goodies the government gives if my freedom is going to be removed and I become a slave to the federal government.
Ron, all you can do is just keep telling people. Some will listen, some won't. But just keep telling them. That's your job.
Well, I have a question about that. From what I've read, and I'm not an Islamic scholar, the doctrines of Islam are completely antithetical to our Constitution.
Oh, yes, you're certainly right about that.
And these guys are here. I work with some of them. They seem to be nice guys, but I don't know how many, you know, how devout or how knowledgeable they are, or what, you know, in a crisis, what those guys would do. But the world's getting smaller. These guys are powerful, and they want to kill us. What are we supposed to do?
Well, first of all, you're going to try to educate people, but we have to have a responsible government. And you have to ask the question is, why did we bring in all these Muslims into
this
country? And the reason was because they wanted to create a division. They wanted to create a multicultural society. They wanted to destroy our Christian heritage. Hey, we got another caller here. Talk to you later. Let's go to Jim from Santa Cruz. Hi, Jim. Did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, just a quick comment. You know, I saw a blurb on Fox News that the Department of Justice admits that it's using the Patriot Act powers for more than just pursuing terrorists.
Oh, you're not. You don't mean that this really wasn't just to get those Islamic terrorists? They were really going to use that against the average American?
Yeah, they're using them. As I understood the story, they're using the powers in other investigations, you know, of other...
What a surprise, huh?
Yeah. Well, that just goes to show that you can't trust government.
That's right.
Anything else, Jim?
That's all.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
We're just about out of time, David. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
We can make a difference by training other people. And this course is designed to make it as simple as possible for you to train other people in the most important thing, to understand the heritage of our nation, of our Christian heritage, our biblical foundations. Our number at Institute on the Constitution is 410-760-9068 or iotconline.com. Contact us, get involved, make a difference by changing the people's hearts and minds in your own community.
Well, well said. Thank you so very much, David. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed certainly what David Whitney was saying. Again, the address is on the web, www.iotconline.com, iotconline.com. And understand, of course, that this is the first step, the first educational step to a better understanding of our way of life and how we lost it. You have to understand where we came from if you're going to understand how we got to where we are today. So you need to understand the foundations of our freedom, and I don't know any better way to do it than to establish an Institute of the Constitution in your church, in your school, in your neighborhood. And so until, well, to our listeners in the great Northwest, until tomorrow evening, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because the forces that are intent upon destroying America are truly demonic. And there is a spiritual battle being fought today, a spiritual battle for the hearts and minds and souls of men. And lastly, of course, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, Dr. Stan, good night. And may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because, of course, we're going to be talking to Randy Thomason for the campaign from California Families. At least we hope we're going to be talking to Randy, if he's not out at some sort of a electoral meeting at the present time. And then we have Brad Dacus, and then we have John Spring lined up to talk to us. And, of course, as you know, this is the evening when they're going to begin counting the votes to determine who the next governor of the state of California is. And have you ever seen more money spent by any political candidates than Arnold Schwarzenegger? Every night, three or four or five times, we'd see Arnold on the screen telling us how much he owes to California, and, of course, why he wants to be the governor of the state and how he needs our help to be able to fix the state. Now, here's the man, of course, with no qualifications. He's never been involved in the political process. Very seldom has voted in the past, I think, 13 of the last 21 elections. A man, of course, who comes from, wife who comes from the Kennedy family. Certainly Arnold Schwarzenegger's environmental consultant is Robert Kennedy's son. One of his consultants is Warren Buffett, a radical left-wing Democrat, and his other consultant is George Shultz, who comes from the Council on Foreign Relations and the Gorbachev State of the World Summit. And yet, of course, he's being sold as a Republican who's going to solve the problems of this state. And I think you have to, in my estimation, he was run for this position, and the people who will ultimately will find out if financed him are the very people we oppose all the time. He's run, I think, to keep Tom McClintock from winning the gubernatorial position, because the last thing that the establishment wants would be a conservative who believes in individual freedom under God to be the governor here in the state of California. Well, Randy, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Stan. What a historic evening for California.
Tell us what's going on. Have you heard any results yet?
Yes, we have. We're here at my office celebrating question one that looks like Gray Davis is going to be recalled with 14% of the vote calculated. Gray Davis is being recalled 56-44%. I pulled that lever today to recall Gray Davis, and boy, did that feel good. after I did that.
All right.
Question two, with 14% in, all the networks are projecting Schwarzenegger as the winner. Schwarzenegger 52%, Bustamante 30%, McClintock 12%. McClintock has already issued a concession speech, thanked his supporters. So if these numbers hold, it's really the one that's going to be closer is the recall question. But if Gray Davis is recalled, Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be the next governor.
Well, it just goes to show you that enough money will buy any position in this country, won't it?
Yeah, I did not support Schwarzenegger. I voted for McClintock today. And really, let me just give you my view of this. The election of Schwarzenegger is not a repudiation of pro-life, pro-family values. Schwarzenegger is a social liberal who has embraced some anti-tax policies. This election was really about saying no to a corrupt governor and yes to a movie star who promised to clean up Sacramento. The entertainment culture in our society, a lot of people felt like they knew Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was merely a big guy on the silver screen. They liked his movies. Now, Republicans seem to be the largest voter bloc at this time. Republicans, you know, in this state, 80% are pro-marriage, almost that amount pro-life. Republicans did not vote for a socially liberal agenda, at least not consciously. Republicans voted for Arnold because he seemed to be the de facto Republican candidate with star appeal, because the Republican establishment had refused to support Tom McClintock, who had real family values and real Republican values.
Well, I think you have to understand, and I know you do, Randy, that the Republican Party was purchased about 2 years ago by a man named Brooks Firestone, who spent billions of dollars buying up the votes for the county central committees, and the county central committees then are the ones who vote for the state Republican Party. And, of course, whether it was anticipation of this or for whatever reason, they spent millions of dollars. They spent probably $50,000 to $100,000 in Little Santa Cruz County. They rejuvenated Howard Jarvis, who's been dead for a number of years. But nonetheless, they sent out a mailing after mailing after mailing after mailing with Howard Jarvis's picture on it saying, vote for these conservatives. And, of course, the people they had listed were the candidates picked by the people who were working with Brooks Firestone. They were not conservatives at all. They were liberal Republicans. Some of them might as well have been Democrats. A few of them were good people who didn't know what the score really was. But this happened all over the state as millions of dollars were spent to buy the Republican Party, which, of course, at a recent meeting, of course, came out strongly in favor of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, Dr. Stan, I'm with you on this. I mean, I'm against the Democrat establishment and against the Republican establishment. When we look at, I think what we're seeing is the elevation of money over family values and over God, basically. God made marriage. God made life. God made a family. And Arnold Schwarzenegger's views on this are liberal, just like Bustamante and Davis. And the only I think hopeful thing is that if we do not go to sleep, but rather we don't just blindly trust Schwarzenegger, then we'll know that when we need to lobby him, we will make those phone calls and send those faxes, and Republicans will be able to have more influence on a Republican governor than we were on a Democrat governor. I share your concern.
Well, I'm really very, very concerned that the leadership of both parties is controlled by exactly the same liberal establishment. And, of course, the great tragedy was the slogan, well, McClintock's a good man, but he can't win, so we better go with Schwarzenegger because, after all, the alternative would be Bustamante.
You know, it was such a big lie. It was such a big lie.
Well, but if you tell a big lie often enough, most people will believe
it. And that's what happened. It was told too often from the establishment Republicans and most talk show hosts around the state who are vassals and spokespersons for their Republican, quote, heroes. And it's sad. So I want to encourage everyone. This was not a repudiation of pro-life, pro-family values. This was a vote of desperation to get rid of corruption and to install someone else, that someone else is named Schwarzenegger, And if everything holds up, Arnold will be the next governor.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much. Would you like to get your address and your website out there ready?
Yes, it's SaveCalifornia.com. Log on to SaveCalifornia.com. That's where you can actually see the election returns, because we have them constantly updated on our website. We've linked to the Secretary of State website. So visit SaveCalifornia.com over the next several days as they count an awful lot of ballots. We won't know the final figures for probably a week, but I think we are able to project comfortably that the recall looks like it's succeeding, and if it does, Schwarzenegger will be the next governor.
All right. Thank you so very much, Randy. Bye-bye. And
keep the faith, Dr. Stan. Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Of course, that's Randy Thomason. And now, of course, we're going to get Brad Dacus on the line and find out what the Pacific Justice Institute is up to. Now, I just want to mention that we will be having a Radio Liberty program, an all-day seminar, and it's going to be held out at Aptos Seascape 2 days after Thanksgiving. I think that's November. I don't have my calendar with me, but it's 2 days after Thanksgiving, and of course there's going to have lunch, and we hope that many of you will start making your plans to attend. And we're going to have, of course, Brad Dacus is one of our speakers, Joan Paris, Bill Sardi will be there, Dr. Robert Klink, and of course myself. And of course we're going to talk about the Patriot Act. We're going to talk about certainly what's happening as far as the war is concerned, and really try to give you an understanding of what's going on in the world today. It'll be a great program, so mark down that program 2 days after Thanksgiving out at the Aptos Seascape. Hope that you can be there. Bring as many people as you can. I want to have a good turnout, and hopefully you'll have a better understanding of what needs to be done if we're going to save our nation. Brad, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Dr. Stanley.
Well, tell us what's happening in your department. I suppose you've been watching the election returns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. It's my first choice wasn't elected, but I think it's definitely going to be an improvement from what we had. So.
All right, fine. Well, tell us a little bit about what you're up to, what the Pacific Justice Institute is accomplishing at the present time.
You bet. Irrespective of what happens at the polls, nothing stops us from Pacific Justice from filing a lawsuit. We just filed a major lawsuit against the Elk Grove Unified School District. Now, this is the same school district that a little over a year ago, we settled on another lawsuit, and they're both the same issue. It's because in a high school, they showed a film promoting homosexuality without parents being aware of it. There's no prior notice. They violated state federal law. We sued them. We settled. 3 months later, they violate the same statutes, violate parent statutes, except in middle school, dealing with young 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And so now we just filed a major lawsuit against them again, and we're taking no prisoners, I can assure you that.
In other words, you're not going to just write this thing off again when they promise to do the right thing.
Right, and they did pay out some monetary money damages and stuff. They had some pain, but nothing like the pain they're going to have after this suit's done. That was, it clearly shows us that this school district just isn't getting it unless they're going to have to really feel much more pain than they have in the past.
Well, maybe, of course, if they have to put out enough money to settle it, why the people there and the district will get unhappy and get rid of the members of the school board.
Yeah, and actually, even more importantly, are the administrators themselves and the teachers union that they've been working with. I think they're the ones who actually need to be replaced, hopefully we'll see some real reforms in those areas.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks for everything. You want to get out your website so people know how to get in touch with you?
You bet. And on our website, by the way, we had a poll. We have a brand new, spanking new website. It's called pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org. And we took a poll and we asked the question, which gubernatorial candidate would best protect parental rights? And I think people are going to be very shocked when they see the results of this poll that we've had going on.
All right, fine.
Are you going to tell us what it is, or we have to wait until next month?
I'll go ahead and tell you.
All right, fine.
It was 2% for Davis, 20% for Schwarzenegger, and 78% for McClintock.
Well, that's about what I would expect.
That's right.
I wonder who those 2% were for Davis. Anyway,
no.
Thanks so very much, Brad.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute, and he'll be our lead-off speaker, our kickoff speaker at the conference we're going to be having 2 days after Thanksgiving at Aptos Seascape. Mark that down. Be sure to come. Well, right now, of course, we're going to get George Spring on the line. We're going to be talking, well, really about almost anything. We'll be talking a little bit about, of course, the Patriot Act and how this impacts upon us. And certainly the liberal media is saying, oh, it's ridiculous to be concerned about the Patriot Act. I mean, we've been able to avoid any other terrorist attacks because of the Patriot Act. And, of course, the only reason the Patriot Act would certainly help at all as far as terrorist attacks is it does give them the right to arrest people who are terrorists and hold them without trial or right of habeas corpus or even release of their names. Now, I think that they certainly should try the terrorists. I think that they should release their names. I think they should have the right to habeas corpus. And I think that when we have terrorists, why they should be tried. Unfortunately, they have all these people they arrested immediately after 9/11, who many of whom were terrorists. They were part of terrorist cells operating here in the United States, but they can't tell the American people that, because then we would know they were actually monitoring the terrorists here in this country, and, well, we might even suspect that they've been lying to us about their foreknowledge of the attack. Well, with that as a background, John Springs here. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Real fine, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure to be invited to your program.
Now, John, of course, has his own radio program in Southern California. Is that every Saturday? It's every Sunday night, isn't it?
Every Sunday night at 9 p.m. here on the West Coast.
All right, fine. And why don't you just give out that station?
Well, it's a KPLS, which is 8:30 on the AM dial, and we come on at 9 p.m. every Sunday evening.
And, of course, how long? I understand the station's been sold. It will go to Spanish-speaking before long?
Well, that's what we've been hearing. I'm still praying for a miracle, Dr. Stan, but I just don't know what's going to happen. As long as we can, we'll be on the radio at that same time.
All right. Well, I hope you can stay on for a good while, because I know you're reaching a lot of people. And we just have to be able to reach people and get them to think. This is the problem. And of course, we had a caller during the last hour, Jim, who called in. And we were talking about the Patriot Act before you came on. And Jim was saying that, you know, he was reading in the newspaper that why the Justice Department has admitted that it's using the Patriot Act not to get terrorists. It's using the Patriot Act for all sorts of other crimes, for drug crimes or any sort of crimes it wants to. In fact, it can use that Patriot Act against everybody. And, of course, this is one of the major problems with it. Although we were told that we had to have the Patriot Act because of the 9/11 attack, and this is how we were going to control Islamic terrorism. There's not one word about Islamic terrorism in that. In fact, they've redefined terrorism so that almost anybody in the listening audience could be considered a terrorist, especially if you wanted to reclaim our Constitution and change the current form of government we have, which is in violation of that Constitution. It's a real scary bill, and people should read it, should understand what it says, and understand that it has all sorts of provisions in there. They sort of scoff at the fact that, people are concerned just because the FBI can find out what library books you've been reading. And, of course, John Ashcroft, the Attorney General, has made a public statement saying, we have never once used that provision. And yet, the Library Association polled librarians, and at least 16 of them said they'd gotten subpoenas from the government for library records, but they can't release their names. Because, of course, the federal government would put any librarian in prison because of the provisions of the Patriot Bill. You're not allowed to tell that you've gotten a subpoena. So how would we know whether or not anybody had been subpoenaed or not if they were threatened with going to prison if they admitted they'd been subpoenaed? It seems to me that they're going to great lengths to conceal the truth from the American people, and if there's nothing to conceal, then why are they so intent upon concealing it?
This is so true, Dr. Stan. Before I go on any further with the Patriot Act, which was actually drawn up way before there was ever a 9/11, I just want to emphasize this on your listening audience, that irregardless what people may think of the Patriot Act, there are at least 1,000 people who are now in prison without the constitutional rights to a fair trial, to a judge by jury, to consult with an attorney, because basically they have lost all of their rights under the Patriot Act.
Now you're talking about the people who were arrested immediately after 9/11.
Correct.
And of course, the government won't tell us their names because they don't want Osama bin Laden to find out who they are. The government will not put them on trial because they don't want Osama bin Laden or Muhammad Atta or any of the other hijackers to find out the information we knew about them before the 9/11 attack. And there's something wrong with this. Well, why would we worry about Osama bin Laden learning what we knew before the 9/11 attack? Is that important? Or is this really an effort to keep the truth from the American people? And I suspect that's what it's really about.
Yes.
Because these people were terrorists. Many of them were terrorists. They knew they were terrorists, and they're concealing that fact from the American people. Because after all, if they knew they were terrorists, what else did they know before the attack? And, of course, if they knew that the attack was coming and did nothing to stop it, if they knew that they were going to hijack planes, and we know that they did, then why weren't, of course, the pilots armed? Why weren't there marshals or National Guards people on the planes? Why wasn't everything done to protect the public? Why were 9 of the hijackers who were stopped on that morning of 9/11 allowed to board the plane with their special little knives and of course their other weapons that they had when they put on the planes? Why would they allow them to go on the planes with box cutter knives? Because those were illegal.
Yes, they were, Dr. Stan. And I might add that going back to the first bombing of the World Trade Center, the first bombing attempt back in the early 90s, I think it was 1993, if I'm not mistaken.
It was in February of 1993, right.
Yes, that during that period of time, There were informants, as you pointed out several times on your programs and in your literature, informants attempting to tell the FBI that they had basically the plans to go ahead with the operation, and they wanted to know from the FBI for guidance purposes if they should substitute the blasting powder with powdered sugar so there would be no explosion. But from all indications, they wanted that event to happen so that they could basically have an event so that they could justify greater control of the American people. And that's the first attempt to bomb the World Trade Center, not the more recent one.
Now, of course, anybody would like to verify what John has said, well, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll give you send you a copy of the article out of the New York Times that tells you exactly what John is saying. And what's even more interesting, I had a friend of mine, Alex Magnus, who called the man who wrote the article, I think his name was Blumenfeld, a few years ago, and the man who wrote the article said, I'm not allowed to talk about that article that I wrote back in 1993. Now, why would a reporter be prevented from talking about an article that he wrote? Well, because basically the article said the FBI knew the attack was coming. They were approached by their informant, a Mr. Salem, S-A-L-E-M, and, of course, he asked for an alternative powder that looked like blasting powder but wouldn't go off. And what did the FBI do to protect the people in the World Trade Center? Why, they fired Mr. Salem, and by so doing, they ensured that the bomb that was built would be highly explosive. And this was all, of course, picked up on tape recordings, and of course, and the whole story was there in the New York Times, but of course, they can't let the American people know that because nobody was ever punished in the FBI. The plan was to have toppled one tower against the other and to have killed 250,000 people. That's what Ramzi Yousef, who built the bomb, told his captors when he was being brought back to the United States, and he's even bragged about it in prison. But nobody in the FBI was ever punished any more than everybody was punished after 9/11, either the FBI or the CIA. In fact, the president congratulated George Tenet for a job well done. I personally would have fired him, unless, of course, he did do exactly what the president wanted, and by so doing, ensured that then we could justify going to war with Afghanistan, we could justify going to war with Iraq, and perhaps Iran and Syria, and even Saudi Arabia are on the list of countries to be toppled in the near future.
Yes, but Dr. Stan, this entire picture of the Patriot Act and Homeland Security has a far greater scope than just what we've been discussing. It is far more encompassing, and let me again remind the listening audience that I was trained as a professional geographer. Many of the professional geographers were also known as environmentalists, but some were also known as regional scientists. Now, that word regional scientist has Marxist connotations, which Americans should become a little bit better informed about. I don't know if I've mentioned to you in the past, Dr. Stan, but within the former Soviet Union and current Russian Federal Republic, at Moscow State University, the most prestigious building on campus, the towering structure, is occupied by the Department of Geography at the upper levels, considering it to be the most prestigious discipline on that campus. And that's by no mistake, basically, because they have a very rigorous program. It's hard to believe, but over there, through their curricula, it's more difficult to become a geographer than it might be to become an engineer, a physician, or an attorney, because it's such a rigorous program that they have. Those that wash out probably remajor in regional studies, or I should say not regional studies, but international studies, and they become ambassadors. But those who make it all the way through become the key advisors to the Politburo, to the Presidium, and to the current leaders and the past leaders of the Soviet Union and Russian Federated Republic. And the reason I bring this to your attention, Dr. Stan, is that most people are unaware that this has been going on since Lenin, what was the Marxist leader of the former Soviet Union, and it's continued. And what people do not understand is that their geographers have been the key planners both for internal affairs and external affairs. And in terms of internal affairs, they had much experience in terms of working with various regions, regionalization, regions which we are now learning about. For example, the largest regions that we refer to in geography are referred to as realms. And back in 1941, of this very month, October 1941, 2 months before Pearl Harbor, there was a map that was completed by Maurice Gomberg. And I think you've been privileged enough to obtain a copy of that map, more or less mapped out the world prior to Pearl Harbor, exactly what was going to become of the world at some time after the war. And at the bottom of the map, there was even a bizarre statement which fallaciously said that, quote, the Soviet Union is as safe as the Bible, to reassure the gullible American people that this was for the good of mankind, for the security of the world, and we would have no more wars once this was put into place. Well, for example, North America, which encompasses Central America, Panama, the Caribbean, Mexico, the United States, and Canada, as well as Greenland, all of this was going to be designated as a so-called United States of America.
Very, very similar to what we're planning with NAFTA, isn't it?
Very much so. In fact, I don't know if I mentioned this to you before, but just last week, President Bush announced that he is pushing for including the Caribbean and Central America into NAFTA.
And I think as, for our listeners, what this is really all about is a long-range internationalist program of uniting, whether it will be the entire Western Hemisphere or just the northern part of the hemisphere. I'm not sure exactly what their plan is, but what they want to do is do away with national sovereignty and bring us the same rights that the Mexican peasant has, and certainly eventually the same living standards. People say it could never happen, and yet you must understand that the leaders of both political parties are dedicated to this globalization process, transferring America's wealth to other nations, tearing down our borders, a common trade area, a common currency, and eventually, of course, a common freedom.
Now, Dr. Stan, if we may update sort of the trend in terms of regionalism, in this particular case, let's look at sub-regions within the North American continent, or sub-regions within the current 50 United States. When President Nixon was in office, he signed a law which basically was to replace the 50 United States with 10 regions, 10 regions which would be administered by non-representative government, by political appointees, basically, of the Nixon administration and possibly the United Nations would eventually be the people in control. And if that does not alarm people, it certainly alarms me, Dr. Stan, because when you consider the fact, for example, that we are part, supposedly, of Region 9, which includes California, Nevada, Arizona, and Hawaii, and when you consider also the fact that just north of us is Region 10, which includes Idaho, Washington, Oregon, and Alaska, that those two regions combined also coincide with the Ninth Circuit Court District. And federal agencies and regions are designed primarily to tear down the sovereignty of every state in this nation.
I'm sure you're absolutely right. And what the American people must understand is their long-range plans by people who have a different vision, a different worldview, who march to a different drumbeat, who worship a different god. We're moving towards a one-world government with a loss of all freedom as we know it. We'll be back in just a moment here with John Spring here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there in the listening audience listening to us, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day as we reach out across America with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And so if you believe there's a problem and you'd like to become part of our team, which is doing something, which is not just sitting around and, eating and meeting and retreating, if you'd like to become an organization that actually is having an impact on the leaders of this country, because many of them, of course, have specifically requested copies of our newsletter, we do hope that you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And of course, when you join the Radio Liberty family, you get our 4 best tapes of the month, you get our monthly newsletter, but of course, you are also helping us accomplish what we do. And then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and let me suggest the September newsletter. It's the testimony that Mindy Kleinberg gave before the committee that's now investigating 911. It is the new committee that, of course, was established under the direction of the president. He insisted there was going to be an investigation. He was going to control the investigation. So his people there, and I can assure you that if the administration has something to hide, it will be carefully hidden by this committee. But they did invite Mindy Kleinberg to testify, representing the families of the people who lost loved ones in the World Trade Center. And of course, Mindy's husband was in the North Tower. You really want to read what she says, because she tells you what happened on the morning of September 11th. And of course, the testimony was pretty well blacked out by the controlled media. Because the last thing they want is for the American people to suspect the truth about what happened on September 11th. That's the September 11th, that's the September Radio Liberty newsletter. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Request a free copy of the newsletter if you'd like. Now, of course, you can find all of our newsletters at our website at www.radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get much of anything accomplished. But there are people who actually do that. You can listen to our archive programs. You can pull down our newsletters. You can find the various things that we offer through Radio Liberty, the tape sets, about 60 of them or more, the videos that we have, the books that we offer that you need to read to find out what's going on. It's RadioLiberty.com. Why don't you check it out?
Hey,
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is John Spring, and of course he has a background as a geographer, which gives him a certain advantage in understanding the geopolitical events that are unfolding today. And John has friends from Afghanistan who will tell you that, you know, the situation in Afghanistan is tragic. We have installed our man, a man named Karzai, as the head of Afghanistan, but he doesn't really represent the people. He represents American oil interests. He was a consultant for UNICAL before the war, and he remains, of course, dedicated to the building of the pipeline up across Afghanistan, which the Taliban would not allow to be built, but, of course, which the new administration is certainly supporting. The tragedy is, of course, the Taliban are still there. They are still fighting. The Taliban actually all came from Pakistan, many of them indoctrinated in the radical form of Islam at the schools in Pakistan, financed by the Saudis. And many of them were taught with American textbooks that, of course, encouraged the belief in the radical Islamic form of religion. And those of you who haven't seen that article out of the Washington Post, why, we'll be glad to provide it for you if you give us a call and ask for it, where, of course, your tax dollars was used to $51 million to buy textbooks to actually indoctrinate the youth of Afghanistan and Pakistan in radical Islam, and many of them became members of the Taliban, and, of course, they were killed during the recent Afghan war. What's wrong with this story? Well, I think that we better start evaluating who it was who financed this whole radical Islamic movement. It was the Saudi Arabians, our good friends. It was the Pakistanis, our good friends. It was the USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, and, of course, the Central Intelligence Agency, and many of the people from that region who've written books about what happened will tell you the CIA funded the radical Islamic movement, not only during the Afghan war between 1980 and 1988 and 89, but after that as well. So, John, now as we see the war developing in Iraq, what's your take on it? Do you have any information?
Well, what I find rather disturbing, Dr. Stan, are the more recent bombings of Syria by Israel, because it looks as if that was the next plan that I was anticipating would go into effect in the Middle East. Once we basically had some sort of control of Iraq, the next step would be to go into neighboring Syria to the west and eventually possibly into Iran later on to the east. And I even heard Hal Lindsey on a Christian radio program today more or less advocating that very policy.
Well, I think that's a disastrous policy for us to be following. We shouldn't be there in the first place. And, of course, if we are going, of course, to use our military might to crush country after country after country, where will we stop? Where will we stop? We brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power in Iran back in 1979 when we toppled the Shah. We knew exactly what we were doing. We know that Saddam Hussein sent his weapons of mass destruction into Syria. Why won't the administration tell the truth and reveal that they knew there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and we know where they are? They're in Syria today. In fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal in the last few days saying, you know, maybe Saddam Hussein moved the weapons of mass destruction into another country. Of course they did. How could I say that? Well, not only has Joel Skousen told me that there was intelligence information, but during an interview with Dor Gold, the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, I posed the question, isn't it true that the weapons have been moved into Syria? He said, oh, yes, of course, without even a second thought. So the Israelis know where the weapons of mass destruction are. The Iraqis know where the weapons of mass destruction are. The Iranians know where the weapons of mass destruction are. The only people who don't know are the American people. Because if we admitted that, then, of course, we wouldn't have been able to tell the American people that Saddam Hussein was a threat to us because he had weapons of mass destruction. He might turn over to Osama bin Laden at any moment and threaten the United States.
This is so true, Dr. Stan. And again,
This is one reason why I would say to every member of your listening audience why you need to keep supporting Dr. Stan on the air, because he's one of the few courageous men that I know of in the entire nation who is willing to go the extra mile and take that dangerous step almost to the edge to bring you the truth of situations that are not always pleasant, but for the survival of a free nation, in a free republic, a representative republic, they are a necessity. So I hope everyone in your listening audience understands that you cannot just continue with your ministry without their support. And the same thing I find, of course, with my own program. It's very difficult to get people to finance your programs nowadays, because they seemingly think that the government is going to take care of everything for them. It's just like the Patriot Act, more formally known as the U.S. Patriot Anti-Terror Act, which was passed after 9/11. There are provisions of that act which would basically take away all of our constitutional rights. For example, Section 802 of that act more or less would arrest any protester at any rally, basically, even if it's a very peaceful rally, nonviolent rally, and those dissidents could be taken off, imprisoned without a trial or any access to an attorney, and remained in prison almost indefinitely. What people don't understand, Dr. Stan, even several years prior to 9/11, judges were being trained on how to expedite mass arrests in the event of national emergency similar to 9/11 and possible riots and protests that might occur at a later date.
Well, FEMA, we know, is building camps for, you know, displaced people. Why would they be spending billions of dollars here in the United States building detention camps? And yet they're doing that, and this has been covered by Chris Ruddy, his material. We have, of course, our 4-tape set on concentration camps. But, of course, FEMA is putting in these camps, you know, in case of a national emergency. What do they know that the average American doesn't know? And how can we, of course, have a free society when the government is keeping secrets from the American people, and when people highly placed in our government consistently lie, and, of course, nothing is ever done to them?
Yes. And also, of course, there's Section 213 or Section 213 of the Patriot Act, which is commonly referred to as the sneak and peek, whereby they can send federal agents into your home without your knowledge. Perhaps you're out having a wonderful dinner with your wife, only to return home later and find that your entire home was ransacked, and they searched your home for items that supposedly were considered to be a threat to the federal government.
Well, of course, the thing is that they probably aren't going to ransack it. They're probably going to go through things, and you will never know that they were there. That is the frightening thing. Only later will they tell you that, of course, they seized these things in your home. Now, they have to have a warrant to do that, but unfortunately, the way this thing is set up, they can get a warrant almost automatically, as they always have been able to. In fact, the judges almost always give the FBI and the warrants that they want. And then, of course, we know the CIA operates in this country illegally. It has for many years. It even has agents planted within the media. And if you doubt that, you need to get, of course, General Odom's new book. General Odom, who is in charge of NSA, the National Security Agency, his new book, Fixing Intelligence, in two places talks about whether or not it is proper that the CIA would have journalists planted in the media, or people planted in the media. Do you know that this is going on? It's violation of the law. But then who would you, of course, appeal to when the government violates the law?
Yes. Now, also in the case of the Patriot Act, there are provisions made that do not require an actual warrant signed by a judge, but rather that can be superseded by an administrator in a federal government agency. So it's referred to as an administrative subpoena or warrant, basically, which can take the place of that. Or a magistrate warrant, whereby a federal official is given the title of sort of a magistrate quasi-legal status, and that individual basically has the same rights as a judge to sign the warrants needed by these agencies to come in and check things over very methodically, and you may not even have a clue, as Dr. Stan mentioned, that someone was in your home. It's very possible that someone could have been in your home, done a very thorough check, and you may not even have a clue that that even occurred. I don't mean to get too paranoid, but there are some people that have high expertise in this type of an operation, and they're very clever. So
and you're only paranoid, John, when you imagine people are against you, when they really are against you, when the government is conspiring against the citizens, and then, of course, you're just being a realist. And let me just go down the various things. I have a little mnemonic. A, of course, when you're absent, they can sneak and peek. B, they can watch your library books, everything you read, everything you buy. C, they can watch your currency, and they're doing that all the time. D, they can look at your disease or your medical records without your knowledge or consent. And, of course, you have no right to medical privacy. Although they call these bills medical privacy rights, they're really not medical privacy. It's so that the government can know everything about your intimate details. E, they can read your emails. They can read your faxes. They can read your listen to your telephone calls, your cell phone calls. Now,
yes.
Supposedly, if you're using your own computer, they have to have a warrant. If you're using somebody else's computer, they don't have to have a warrant. But we know the NSA has been doing it illegally for years. And then, of course, who do you appeal to when the government violates its own laws? And then, of course, you know, the great tragedy is that people do not understand that they have the ability to monitor everything we do, and they're doing it today in the name of fighting terrorism. The thing is that they were doing this before they had the Patriot Act. They were monitoring the terrorists. We know now from the report that came out in July, actually it was released in December, but we were able to get it in July. And if you read that carefully, you find out that they had all of these informants within the terrorist movement. And many of the hijackers actually were meeting with the people that the FBI was monitoring. Now, they deny this, but all you have to do is read the report, and it's all right there. So why is the FBI lying? Because, of course, they cannot let the American people know the truth. And that is that they knew who some of the hijackers were because they were in touch with the Islamic terrorists that they were monitoring right here in the United States, and they had been monitoring for many years.
Yes, and Dr. Stan, there's another aspect that we need to cover regarding the Patriot Act, and that is that it is tied in very closely with a document that was published by the U.S. Department of State back in September of 1961, commonly referred to as U.S. Department of State Publication 7277. And that more or less outlines the three phases or stages of disarmament. And we are now entering into stage three, which calls for the disbanding of all of our armed forces, as well as our arsenal of weaponry, and furthermore, to provide a military force to control the American population so that basically they will not be in a position to protest this outrageous policy.
Well, of course, the thing is that this is what all this talk about gun control is. And, of course, this is one of the frightening things about Arnold Schwarzenegger. He wants, of course, to go along with all these gun control agendas. And the good conservatives here in California backed him. Well, after all, McClintock couldn't win. We wouldn't want this to money. And, of course, you tell a big lie often enough, and everybody agrees. Now, I don't see much evidence of the third stage of the 7277 program at the present time. Certainly our military is intact, at least in many states where they have right to carry permits. I can see that changing at some time in the not-too-distant future, but fortunately, at least the Second Amendment is not completely dead yet, is it?
Well, Dr. Stan, realistically speaking, from the Marxist perspective, when we had our Congress, specifically the U.S. Senate, ratify the United Nations organization and make that basically the organization that we would become a member of, we almost diluted a good share of our constitutional rights without even being aware of it. So from the perspective of the Marxists and the people, the high powers to be, they have very little respect for our the Constitution, and they're attempting to skirt around it whenever they possibly can through various acts such as the Patriot Act.
Well, I think you raise a very important point, John, and this is something that most Americans don't understand. Every humanist, every socialist, and every communist in the United States, and all the people who are secret communists and communist sympathizers, what do they do here in the United States? They work to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., which is exactly what the members of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateralists intend to do, which is exactly what the Masons and the Theosophists and the Rosicrucians tend to do, centralize all power with the federal government. Now, why would that be? Because, of course, America and its freedom were based upon decentralization of power, limiting the power in Washington, D.C. And if you doubt that this is exactly what the communists are working for, we have a directive that was mailed out in June of 1963. And I still have a copy of that communist paper talking about the purpose of communism was to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and all the federal legislation and the federal programs, and of course the federal control of education, which incidentally George Bush just put through, and of course the federal control of welfare and the federal control of guns. All of this has been planned for 50 or at least for 40 years, probably yes, long before that. Until people understand that's what the communists worked for. And if you read the communist publications, amazingly enough, although they may talk about the military-industrial complex, they never talk about the Council on Foreign Relations. Why would that be? Don't they understand that the CFR controls both of our political parties? Oh, they rail against, of course, capitalism, and they rail against the corporations, but they never talk about the organization that coordinates those. And you have to ask yourself, why would that be?
Well, it's because they want to have more and more control of us. And by the way, the Department of Homeland Security, the newest branch of our government in terms of departments or agencies, is basically going to become the military arm for the State Department of the UN. And once the Homeland Security Act is put into place, whereby yours truly and Dr. Stan, if we continue talking about the Homeland Security and Patriot Acts as we are right now, we'll be accused of violating its policies and could possibly be imprisoned, certainly punished for violating this act. And the truth of the matter is that this could happen very rapidly. It's not something that necessarily would take another decade. This is something that could take possibly less than a year if things go according to their schedule. And what Americans need to do, Dr. Stan, they need to start waking up now that this is not something that we can put on the back burners in our minds and say, well, another 43 years can go by and we don't really have to worry about this.
Well, I think the important thing is the American people have to realize that the Office of Homeland Security was planned long before the 9/11 attack. It was really phase three of the report of the National Commission on Security in the 21st Century, which was, of course, commissioned in 1997. There were 14 commissioners, and isn't it interesting, 13 of them came from the Council on Foreign Relations. The committee was co-chaired by Gary Hart and Warren Rudman, and of course it was just 2 days after the 9/11 attack. It was on either the 13th or the 14th of September of 2001 when Gary Hart, speaking to an assembled group of the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C., said, this may give the president the opportunity to, let's see, the exact quotation is getting late. I don't care. But the basic theme was the 9/11 attack may give the president may be able to use this this tragedy to bring about what his father talked about, and that is a new world order. The president may be able to use this tragedy to bring about or to create what his father talked about, and I believe only once, and that is a new world order. And that's really what it was all about. Anybody can go up on the web and get Paul Bremer's report. It was put out, Paul Bremer's the man in charge over in Iraq, but a year before the 9/11 attack, he put out something, the Bremer report, talking about countering terrorism, and in that report, he talked about Pearl Harbor. There would be another Pearl Harbor. And how, of course, you could explain Pearl Harbor because it was just, well, it was just the inefficiency of government. And then he went to talk about what you'd do when we had this attack, and he talked about a military dictatorship in the United States. You can pull that down off the Internet. Look under Paul Bremer, his report on terrorism a year before that, the 9/11 attack, and the solution was the military dictatorship here. So everything is in place. They know exactly what they're doing. They knew that there was going to be a Pearl Harbor attack. A man named Ledeen from PNAC talked about how lucky we were that we had Pearl Harbor so we could get into the Second World War. Of course, we've seen the PNAC group talking about how we won't be able to implement our policies unless there's a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. And of course, if you read that report by Paul Bremer, the whole beginning of this talks about Pearl Harbor and how, of course, these things could happen just because we were so inefficient. I believe they knew exactly what was going to happen, and that is why nothing was done on the morning of September 11th, 2001, why the president knew we were under attack. And he went into the schoolroom with those children, and after he was told about the second plane attacking the World Trade Center, he sat for an additional 6 minutes reading to the school children. America's under attack, and the president is sitting there reading to the school children. Both the towers have been attacked. He'd already seen pictures of the first tower attacked. He's told the second tower is attacked. And he spends 6 minutes after that, only when the reporters start saying, Mr. President, are we under attack? Does he get up and leave the schoolroom? What does that suggest to you? That he was really concerned about protecting the American people? Well, I don't think so at all. I think that, of course, they knew exactly what was happening. And if you read what Donald Rumsfeld did that morning, if you read what General Myers did, and that's all, of course, in our September newsletter. You'll want to get it. You'll want to read it. And, of course, ask yourself, why weren't they doing something to stop the attack on the United States? Why were they all so busy that morning? Why were they all inaccessible?
Yes. Now, Dr. Stan, there's something else, though, regarding Paul Bremer that the American people need to understand, and that is after 9/11, he was, I guess, invited by the Heritage Foundation to establish basically some study groups to more or less determine what should be done about a 9/11 situation, and hence the Homeland Security Act and the Patriot Act came into being. Onto the drawing board, because they had to have a consensus of individuals supposedly advising the Bush administration so that it looked legitimate, as if we needed to have such a policy. And that was done by our dear friends at the Heritage Foundation.
And, of course, who is Paul Bremer? Why, he comes from Kissinger and Associates. He is part of this whole conglomerate that's so interested in making sure we have adequate oil supplies, working directly for the big oil companies. And now he is the dictator of Iraq.
Yes, he is. And American GIs are going to continue to die over there because, basically, we are not working out a policy which is going to enable us to assimilate the Iraqi civilians as soon as possible so that we can return. Rather, we want to have that be a staging area for further advances, militarily speaking, into the neighboring nations that we alluded to earlier. But in addition to Syria and Iran, it could very well include Saudi Arabia and some of the other nations in the Middle East. I just don't know where the Bush administration and its successor are planning to stop, basically, in the Middle East. It's very frightening.
And as we said earlier, things are very disappointing in Afghanistan. What we have now is basically a communist regime with Fahim basically running the show. And for those of you who may have forgotten who Fahim was, he was one of the Marxist leaders who participated in the coup when the communists came to power in Afghanistan in 1978.
Yeah, things come to full circle, don't they? And the more things change, the more they remain the same. John, thanks for as much being with us. Always a pleasure having you as a guest here on Radio Liberty.
Well, it's certainly an honor, and the Lord bless you with the challenging work that lies ahead.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. That was John Spring, and we ask you to pray for America. Pray for our leaders. And, of course, if anything we're saying here you want documented, you can always drop us a note. We'll try to get you the information. And, of course, remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, I guess it'll be Thursday at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.